Tonight is the second Sunday of the month, and we'll be taking steps 3, 4, and 5 with Paul Fisher. Welcome to the Beginner's Big Book Alcoholics Anonymous Group. In this Big Book 12-step meeting, we follow the directions in the Big Book and take all 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous in 1 month. We take the 12 steps at the group level as an overview. If you want to take the 12 steps on a one-to-one basis, please connect with a sharing partner after the meeting ends tonight. A sharing partner is someone who has taken all 12 steps and has had a spiritual awakening and is willing to help the new person through the 12 steps. We are recreating the beginner's classes in the early 1940s when recovery from alcoholism was over 75%. In Cleveland, there were 4 beginner's classes with a 93% sobriety rate. Our AA pioneers took 12 steps fast. Beginner's Big Book provides sharing partners for this meeting only. They can work with you on a one-to-one basis to take all 12 steps and be recovered from alcoholism. Any men or women who want to take the 12 steps, please connect with a sharing partner after the meeting ends. Will the sharing partners who want to work with others, please raise your hand. Thank you. We have Big Book study guidebooks available to use in the meeting. Each page and paragraph is numbered. Please do not write in the book. Big Book study guidebooks are for sale at group cost of $8. Please silence your cell phones and please no texting. All court papers will be signed after the meeting is over, after we have said the Lord's Prayer. Please keep your court paper until then. Sometimes this meeting runs over 1 hour. Do not expect to have your court paper signed at 7:30 or if you have to leave early. Again, all court papers will be signed after we had said the Lord's Prayer. Please keep your court paper until then, and we'll sign it after the meeting is over. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses or opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Here's a quote from our AA co-founder, Bill Wilson, written in the 1958 AA Grapevine. Sobriety, freedom from alcohol, through the teaching and practice of the 12 steps, is the sole purpose of an AA group. End quote. Let's have a moment of quiet time to invite the God of our own understanding into our hearts and remind ourselves why we are here tonight, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. We'll be passing the basket at this time for the seventh tradition.
Okay, let's move on to step three. Let's turn to page 59. Page 59, and we'll read step three. Made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. First paragraph on page 58. Paragraph 1, page 58. For this alcoholic, this is the most important thing for me to hear every meeting I attend, where it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Notice that there is no S on path. Have you heard? There are a lot of different ways you can do this program. That's not what my book says. You know what thoroughly means? According to Webster's Dictionary, it means to complete. So in other words, if I want to experience what the authors are experiencing when they talk about new power, new peace, new happiness, new direction, being happy, joyous, and free, being in a position of neutrality, safe and protected, the problem has been removed, I stop fighting everybody and everything, I have to be willing to do what the authors are doing. If I'm not willing to do that, I will not. It's guaranteed. I've had personal experience with it. Not thoroughly following this path. Working half measures in the rooms of AA. So if I want what they have, I have to be willing to do what they're doing. Then they go on to say, those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this sinful program. Here the authors are telling me why I don't stay sober. Why am I happy, joyous, and free? Because I cannot or will not completely give myself to this simple program. In other words, am I willing to ask God to take it away for good? Not just today, but for good. Am I willing to quit for good? Every single person that I've ever taken through the steps has had the same experience that Bill Wilson had. And this is basically what happened to me. It's basically the same thing that happened to Bill. As a result of going through these steps, I had a spiritual experience. In other words, the compulsion to drink was removed. I was separated from alcohol. And as a result of that, God made a deal with me. He said, I'll tell you what. He said, I will guarantee that you will never, ever have to drink again, and you will never have to live it the way you have been living. And all I ask is that you take this message of hope and pass it on to others. It's a done deal. To make that kind of a deal with a real alcoholic, because I came in here with the desperation of a drowning man, I could not stop drinking. I could not stop hurting myself and everybody around me. So when that happened as a result of going through the steps, that sounded like a pretty good deal to me. And I'm here to guarantee each and every person in this room that you do not ever have to drink again. And you do not ever have to live the way you've been living. Now, it doesn't matter if you're brand new in sobriety or if you've been around the rooms for a while. Even if you've been around the rooms for a while and you don't like the way your life is going, I can guarantee you, you don't have to live that way anymore. Okay, let's go to the next paragraph. Line 3. So we're at paragraph 2, page 58. Line 3. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go any length to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. So let's turn those into questions. Notice that the authors aren't saying, do you want what we have? That's a thieves' motto. I want what you have. I want your stuff. That's a thieves' motto. That's not what it's saying. It's saying, if you have decided, in other words, have you made a decision? If I've decided that I want what you have, I'm making a decision. I'm going to do what you're doing. So the people that are new in this room, when you go to meetings and you see people with long-term sobriety and they seem to be enjoying life, to have what they have, you have to be willing to do what they're doing. So I have to ask myself that question. Have I made that decision? And are willing to go to any length to get it. It doesn't say most links, a lot of the links. It says any link. Turn that into a question. Are you willing to go to any link? Then it goes on to say, then you are ready to take certain steps. Okay, page 59, second line from the top. Page 59, second line from the top. But there is one who has all power. That one is God. Did you notice my name is not in there? It doesn't say that there are two, and one of them is Paul. It doesn't say that. It says there is one who has, doesn't say most of the power. Doesn't say he has majority of the power. It says all the power. Once again, I'm not the smartest kid on the block, but I didn't put this much together. If God has all the power, how much does that leave for me? None. I don't have any of the power. I am basically a foot soldier. That's what I am. The power doesn't originate in me. Okay, page 60. Page 60, we're going to read the ABCs. The ABCs on page 60. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. C, that God could and would if he was taught. Let's turn those into questions. Now we're going to make a shift. Now the authors are asking me, do I believe? So ask these questions of yourself. Do you believe you're an alcoholic? Do you believe you can't manage your own life? Do you believe no human power can relieve your alcoholism? Do you believe that God could and would if you seek him out? In the very next line, the authors say, being convinced, we were at step three, which is that we decided to turn our will and our life over to God as we understood him. Just what do we mean by that, and just what do we do? Being convinced, convinced of what? Well, convinced of the ABCs. Let's ask that question. Are you convinced that you're an alcoholic? Are you convinced that you can't manage your own life? Are you convinced that no human power can relieve your alcoholism? Are you convinced that only God can if you seek him out? Next, the authors say the first requirement. I heard that there were no requirements for step three. That's what I heard. And yet the authors say right here, the first requirement is that we be convinced that any life run on self-will can hardly be a success. I'm going to read this in the first person to receive some perspective. So I'm no longer reading about some guy in a book and his experience, but I'm going to turn it into first person so I can get a personal perspective. Follow along with me, if you will. The first requirement is that I be convinced that my life run on self-will can hardly be a success. On that basis, I am almost always in collision with something or somebody, even though my motives are good. I try to live by self-propulsion. I'm like an actor who wants to run the whole show, is forever trying to arrange the lights, the ballet, the scenery, and the rest of the players in my own way. If my arrangements would only stay put, if only people would do as I wished, the show would be great. Everybody, including myself, would be pleased. Life would be wonderful. In trying to make these arrangements, I may sometimes be quite virtuous. I may be kind, considerate, patient, generous, even modest and self-sacrificing. On the other hand, I may be mean, egotistical, selfish, and dishonest. But as with most humans, I'm more likely to have varied traits. What usually happens? Show doesn't come off very well. I begin to think life doesn't treat me right. I decide to exert myself more. I become, on the next occasion, still more demanding or gracious, as the case may be. Still, the play does not suit me. Admitting I may be somewhat at fault, I am sure that other people are more to blame. Of course they are. I become angry, indignant, self-pitying. What is my basic trouble? Am I not really a self-seeker even when trying to be kind? Am I not a victim of the delusion that I can wrest satisfaction and happiness out of this world if I only manage well? Is it not evident to the rest of the players that these are the things that I want and do not my actions make each of them wish to retaliate, snatching all they can get out of the show? Am I not, even in my best moments, a producer of confusion rather than harmony? I am self-centered, egocentric, as people like to call it nowadays. I'm like the retired businessman who lolls in the Florida sunshine in the winter, complaining of the sad state of the nation, the minister who sighs over the sins of the 20th century, politicians and reformers who are sure all would be utopia if the rest of the world would only behave, the outlaw state cracker who thinks society has wronged him, and the alcoholic who has lost all and is locked up. Whatever my protestations, am I most concerned with myself, my resentments, and my self-pity? Of course I am. Selfishness, self-centeredness, that I think is the root of my troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, and self-pity, I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt me, seemingly without provocation, but I invariably find that at some time in the past, I have made decisions based on self, which later placed me in a position to be hurt. So, my troubles, I think, are basically of my own making. They arise out of me, and I am an extreme example of self-will run riot, though I usually don't think so. Above everything, I must be rid of this selfishness. I must, or it kills me. God makes that possible. And there often seems no way of entirely getting rid of self without his aid. I have had moral and philosophical convictions galore, but I could not live up to them, even though I would have liked to. Neither could I reduce my self-centeredness much by wishing or trying on my own power. I had to have God's help. So here on page 62 in paragraph 1 and 2, what we have is the problem. The problem is my selfishness, my self-centeredness, my troubles of my own making. We all have issues, don't we, in sobriety? I have lots of issues, too. And you know what mine are? They're on this page. These are my issues. Selfishness and self-centeredness. So, a couple of questions to consider. Are you willing to consider that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of your troubles? Are you willing to consider that your troubles are basically your own making? Now, that being the case, I'm going to show you a shortcut. The next time you're calling your sponsor and you want to whine about something, just cut the chase and call them up and say, hey, I want to whine about me, okay? Instead of complaining about everybody else, check it out. I just conceded that selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my troubles. And that my troubles are basically of my own making. That being the case, and I bring a trouble to you, who am I complaining about? I'm complaining about me. Is that wild or what? That's wild. And the authors are telling me that I'm driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity. Now, if I am driven by self-delusion, how am I going to know if I'm self-deluded? No, it's not a trick question. I'm not going to know. That's like going to a fish and asking it, what is water? It will say, well, you know, it's everywhere. That's how self-delusion is in my life. It's everywhere. In other words, I'm not going to know when I'm self-deluded. Why? Because I lack power. That's the reason I repeatedly go through the steps and maintain the disciplines of self-examination. And rely on people around me to hold me accountable. Because I'm not capable of knowing when I'm self-deluded if I'm driven by self-delusion. See what a trap it is? Yeah, I know what I need to do. I know what's best for me, certainly. I don't know what's best for me. I still don't know what's best for me today after 20 years of sobriety. If I knew what was best for me, I wouldn't be maintaining these disciplines. By doing the actions of these principles, they began to work for me. I wasn't working them. They began to work for me. By the time I got to the end of the steps, I had a spiritual experience. The compulsion to drink was removed, and my attitude was totally different. I didn't intend on sticking around these rooms. I just wanted to buy a little bit of time, get people off my back, stay out of jail. When I got to the end of the steps, my thinking changed. I wanted to stick around. Okay, so we have the problem in paragraph 1 and 2. Now let's look at the solution. It's in paragraph 3, the same page. This is the how and why of it. First of all, I had to quit playing God. It didn't work. Next, I decided that hereafter in this drama of life, God was going to be my director. He is the principal. I am his agent. He is a father. I am his child. Most good ideas are simple. And this concept was the keystone. Here's that arch again. The keystone of the new and triumphant arch through which we pass to freedom. A couple of points here. Keystone in that arch. The cornerstone is the first brick. The keystone is the brick in the middle of the arch, which holds it together. So my cornerstone, my beginning, is my willingness to believe in a power greater than me. And my keystone, which is what holds it together, is that I need to stop playing God. Do you have a partnership with God today? I thought so at one time in sobriety. You know what partnership means? It means equal position of power. Now, if he has all the power, how can that be a partnership? If you work for someone else, are you in partnership with your employer? No, probably not. You do the work, they pay you, and everything you need is provided for you. Is that accurate? That's been accurate in my life. Okay, providing that we do the solution, which is stop playing God, what that basically means is that I'm going to do God's work. What is God's work? Well, we're going to find out. These are the third step promises. Top of page 63. Page 63. When I sincerely took such a position, the position they're talking about in the previous paragraph on page 62, all sorts of remarkable things followed. We had a new employer being all powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to him and performed his work well. Established on such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves, our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind, as we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of his presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, or the hereafter. We were reborn. Wow, that's pretty powerful. Look at the guarantees involved in that paragraph. It has been my experience that God does not have any favorites, but I'll tell you what, he pays his workers really well. He pays them really well. So, if I'm willing to take the solution in the last paragraph on page 62, I will experience what it says in the first paragraph on page 63. Now, the authors are telling me that we were reborn. You know what that means? It means I have to die. The Paul Fisher that I know of had to die. Paul Fisher, the alcoholic, had to die so that my spirit may live. I'm told that I'm not the same person I was when I walked into these rooms. I hope not, because he wasn't wrapped too tightly. Because I just was not really well liked around the rooms. You know, like early on, my friends referred to me as stark raving sober. Because that's what I was. I was out of control. My life was unmanageable. I was trying to run the show myself. So here we're being asked to make a decision. Am I willing to make a decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God as I understand it? Now look at those words, will and life. We write wills, don't we, before we die? You know what a will does? It gives people instructions on what to do. So if I'm going to turn my life over to the God of my understanding, I'm going to ask for instructions. My life, I'm going to do things according to what I believe God would have me be. And we're told later in the book, in step 12, what our real purpose is in these rooms. See, the real work is not doing the first 11 steps. The real work is step 12. The first 11 steps prepare us to do the real work. See, that deal I made with God, He guaranteed that I'll never have to drink again. And all He asked me to do was take this message of hope and carry it to other alcoholics. Best game in town for an alcoholic. Best game in town. So now we're at step 3. Before we read the third step prayer, I'm going to ask those that are willing to participate to go ahead and let's read this together. Just to pause for a moment before we do so and to give some serious consideration if you're willing to make this decision. My own experience with the third step was that I was never the same after I took the third step as instructed in this book. It may have been subtle, but it was different. It was never the same after that. You see, I'm making a decision here that I'm going to give my life to that God. After all, He's going to give me, they just got through telling us, He's going to give us everything we need. So those of you that are willing to take the third step prayer, those that are comfortable, feel free to kneel. Go ahead and do so now. Those that are not comfortable, don't feel obligated to do so. We'll take a moment asking for direction and care. God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them, and make a witness to those who have Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Amen. Congratulations. Now we're going to move into step 4. I'm going to flip back to page 59 so we can read that. And step 4 says, make a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Okay, last paragraph on page 63. Next, we launch out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning. Notice there is no mention in here of taking a gentleness break. We're going to move right in. We're going to take some action. You notice it doesn't say that we're going to mosey out on a course of action. It says launch. You ever seen a rocket launch? There's nothing subtle about it. It just takes off abruptly. So I'm going to launch on a course of action, not a course of action, but a course of vigorous action. First step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us have never attempted. Though our decision, here they're referring to step 3, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and to be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. In other words, the experience that you're having right now of feeling connected to a God of your understanding, to your higher power, you will lose that if you do not immediately move into step 4. But you see, I've had this experience of not immediately moving to step 4, and it says it could have little permanent effect. So I lose that feeling, that sense of connection that I'm experiencing in step 3. I'm going to lose it. Here the authors are telling us what the primary purpose of step 4 is. It's to uncover the things in me that have been blocking me from this God of my understanding. You see, if I'm blocked from God, I'm blocked from you. It's like somebody just pulled a set of blinds in front of me and I can't see. I can't see this God. And if I can't see this God, I can't see you. And if I can't hear this God, I can't hear you. That's the fundamental purpose of step four, is to uncover those things. It says that we had to get down to causes and conditions. A cause is defined as that which produces a result. Condition is defined as state of mind. So I need to get down to the states of mind that block me from God. See, when I'm blocked, then I have no access to power to stay sober and to be happy, joyous, and free. So ask yourself, do you want to be happy, joyous, and free? So maybe we need to get down to these causes and conditions. Next paragraph. Therefore, we start upon a personal inventory. This is step four. Business which takes no regular inventory usually goes broke. Taking a commercial inventory is a fact-finding and fact-facing process. That's all it is. I don't like it. Even after all this time in these rooms, I still don't like doing inventory. I do it. The reason I do it, based on experience, what happens as a result of concluding it. It is an effort to discover the truth about the stock and trade. One object is to disclose damaged or unsaleable goods, to get rid of them promptly and without regret. If the owner of the business is to be successful, he cannot fool himself about values. We did exactly the same thing with our lives. We took stock honestly. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure. Being convinced of self manifested in various ways was what had defeated us. We considered it as common manifestations. The reason I don't inventory my assets are, number one, they don't block me from God. They don't cause me failure. They don't cause me defeat. My assets don't cause me problems. My liabilities do, my shortcomings, my defects. The biggest argument I've heard from people through the years, yeah, but we should inventory our assets. Why? Have they blocked you from God? Have they caused you failure? Have they caused you defeat? See, these are the things that block me. Next paragraph. Resentment's the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From its stem, all forms of spiritual disease. For we have been not only mentally and physically ill, we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In other words, I don't straighten out mentally, physically first and then get spiritual. I need to straighten out spiritually first, and then the mental and physical is straightened out automatically. Okay, page 66, paragraph 2. Page 66, paragraph 2. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for alcoholics, these things are poison. You know what a resentment is? It's like taking poison and expecting someone else to die. They're home sleeping soundly. We turned back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We're going to look at what we write in our inventory from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state of wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. Now, I thought that meant kill me physically. Well, it didn't kill me. I can have that resentment. I don't need to do that writing. It didn't kill me. Yes, it did kill me. It can kill my spirit. It can kill my hope. It can kill my peace, my serenity, my joy, my motivation, my inspiration. You see what I'm saying? It can kill us in a lot of different ways. Eventually, for the alcoholic, it does kill them physically. I can be attending meetings in these rooms and still be dying in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because it has been my experience that I'm only going to experience one of two things in these rooms. I'm either getting better or I'm getting worse. To my knowledge, nobody has ever been known to coast uphill. If I'm coasting, I'm only going in one direction. How many people in here want to get worse? Not one hand went up. Okay. Page 67, paragraph 2. Page 67, paragraph 2. Referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. I'm going to look for my part in the resentment. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man's. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. I remember in early sobriety thinking, I don't have any reason. I don't have any defects of character. You do. I would go to meetings, I heard lots of defects. I said, oh my God, these people need help. I'm really thankful they're here. Listen to that guy over there. Boy, does he need to be here. I remember talking to my sponsor about it. He said, man, these people are really sick. And I started going on. He said, yeah, really? I know what. I want you to get one of those little pocket tablets and put it in your pocket next time you go to a meeting, and I want you to write down everything you dislike about those SOBs. Okay? And I said, okay. I thought I was being a good little student, you know, little good AA, and I went to meetings, and I pulled out my little tablet, and yeah, arrogant, selfish, cocky, slut, you know. You know, all these defects. And I remember meeting with him and saying, well, I did my list. I did my homework. Now we know what's wrong with all these people, don't we? He says, yeah. He says, now you have your character defects. Wait a minute. I'm not a slut. Wait a minute. Didn't you tell me, you know, about these affairs and, oh, yeah, that, yeah. And what I saw was characteristics in people that disturbed me that I was unwilling to look at in myself. That's why they bothered me so much. Page 68, paragraph 1. Page 68, paragraph 1. We reviewed our fears thoroughly. We put them on paper, even though we had no resentment connection with them. We asked ourselves why we had them. Wasn't it because self-reliance failed us? So we're going to write about our fears, and we're going to ask some questions. Okay, page 69. 10 lines from the top. Page 69, 10 lines from the top. 2 words in from the left and 2 words in from the right. There's a statement in the middle of the line. You see it? It says, we all have sex problems. It doesn't say they all have sex problems. It doesn't say all men have sex problems. It doesn't say all women have sex problems. It says we all have sex problems. Last time I looked, I'm part of we. Next paragraph. We reviewed our own conduct over the years past. This is about our social conduct. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, or inconsiderate? Whom had we hurt? Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness? Where were we at fault? What should we have done instead? We got this all down on paper and looked at it. Okay, what we're going to do is we're going to go over the 4-step outline that I've provided you. Go ahead and pull that out. If you do not have one of those, come on up and get a copy of that. You may notice that this outline looks a little different than the example that is on page 65. Be aware that all the items that are discussed in step 4 are listed on this paper. You will notice it lists causes, conditions, various states of mind, various manifestations of self, things that have the potential or possibility of causing you failure or defeat. It mentions fear, resentment, selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, etc., etc. I got this outline from Clarence Snyder in Cleveland, Ohio. Clarence's sponsor was Dr. Bob. This is how Dr. Bob did the inventory. This is the way he taught Clarence Snyder how to do inventory, and Clarence Snyder, in turn, has passed it on. My understanding that in the early 40s when they were doing inventory, this is the way they did it at the time. It seemed to be very effective for them in producing a 75% success rate in that Cleveland and Akron area. And I figured, well, if it helped those guys so well, maybe it can help me. This is a very simple process. A couple of things I would like to emphasize about step 4. You cannot do it wrong. you do not need to do it right. It probably will not be your last inventory, I hope, for your sake. You turn over to page 71 before we go over this. Page 71, line 3 from the top of the page. Page 71, line 3 from the top. If you have already made a decision, that's step 3, and an inventory, that's step 4, of your gross or handicaps, you have made a good beginning. It doesn't say I'm finished. It's impossible for me to uncover everything that causes me failure and defeat in one inventory. You can spot people who do regular inventory in meetings. They're pretty easy to spot. They're spontaneous. They make fun of themselves. They laugh. They have a good time. They enjoy life much more fully. Why? Because the more inventory I do as the years progress, the more I become aware of my limitations. And the more I embrace my limitations, the more peace of mind I have. Because now you know exactly who I am. I have nothing to hide from you. I get to be me around you. There's nothing to pretend anymore. And that's called peace of mind. And that's the byproduct of doing regular inventory. What we're going to do, we're going to briefly go over this list and come up with a real resentment. And I'm going to show you how to walk through the resentment part of the inventory. Basically, with all the statements on this list, we're going to ask two questions. What I like to do when I take someone through the steps for the first time is I like to do the writing for them. The reason for that, so they're not distracted with writing. All they're doing is sharing. And I sit down and I do the writing so they can fully concentrate on what it is that they're sharing with me. So in other words, you do it that way, you do the fourth and fifth step at the same time. Because it tells us over here, in the fifth step, on page 72, it's in the second paragraph, about 6 lines down. We will be more reconciled to discussing ourselves with another person when we see good reasons why we should do so. The first, best reason first. If we skip this vital step, we may not overcome drinking. I may not overcome drinking if I don't do inventory. Page 73, about 7 lines down from the top. But they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. That's why it's essential when we do this inventory in this workshop that we do it with someone who has had experience in doing the inventory in this way. That's why if you've been around the rooms for a while, we ask that you have an open mind in the event that you're paired off with someone who's only been sober a couple of months. You might have double-digit sobriety. It doesn't matter. I've seen it happen often. I've seen people with long-term sobriety being paired off with someone who is relatively new, who has gone through all 12 steps and has had a spiritual awakening as a result of doing the steps in this way, and that person had a spiritual awakening. Again, had a new experience. Because I can guarantee you, if you approach these steps, it doesn't matter if you're new or if you've done the steps multiple times. If you will approach these steps with an open mind, you're guaranteed two things. You are going to have a new experience with the steps, and you will discover some truth about yourself. And that's what my sponsor regularly will ask me whenever I become resistant. How free do you want to be? Okay, so basically we're asking two questions. The first item is self-pity. You sit down with a person, you're going to ask them, hey, do you have any self-pity? Yeah, I got some of that. All right, give me some examples. That's the first question. Give me examples of your self-pity. You may or may not have all of these things on this list. That's why we ask that question. Do you have any self-pity? Yeah. Okay. Give me some examples, and you're going to write those down. The second question we're going to ask per item is, who is affected by that? So the first question is, if you have it, give me examples. Second question, who was affected? We're going to move on to the next item. Self-justification. Do you have any of that? I can't think of anything. Well, did you ever justify your self-pity? Did you ever justify drinking? Did Jared justify not going to meetings? Not doing inventory? Self-condemnation. That's about beating ourselves up. Self-importance. Criticizing. Negative thinking. Vulgar, immoral thinking. What is that? Well, I'll tell you what it is. You're sitting in a meeting, you're having sexual fantasies about someone in the meeting. That's vulgar, immoral thinking. Do you have fantasies of violence or property destruction? Do you have that fantasy of waiting for that person around the corner with a baseball bat? Insincerity, procrastination, dishonesty, impatience, resentment, hate, envy, jealousy, laziness, lying, gossip, selfishness, fear. So we're basically going to ask two questions with the exception of resentment and fear. When we get to the fear, we're simply going to make a list of all the things that we fear. Resentment, we're going to ask numerous questions. So basically, I'm going to ask, what is resentment? What's the reason I have it? What's my part in the resentment? Then I'm going to look for the underlying fear. What is it I'm expecting from that person? What is it I'm afraid I'm not going to receive? Let me give you an example from my own inventory. When I came into these rooms, I hated my mother. I hated that woman with a passion. She kicked me out of the house when I was 15 years old. Here I am, 15 years old, living in abandoned houses, sneaking in the back of restaurants, waiting for them to bring out excess food and getting food out of the dumpster so I could eat. And as a result of living on the streets and living in abandoned houses, I turned to a life of crime, and I blamed her, and I ended up in prison. It's her fault. Look what she did to me. I'm only 15 years old. She kicked me out of the house. It wasn't until I came into these rooms, had opportunity to do inventory, and I was asked those questions. My resentment was, my mother kicked me out of the house. How did I treat her? Not very nicely. I was out of control. Everybody in that house was terrified for their safety. My mother was at her wit's end. She had no other options available to her at that time. She didn't know what else to do. I was out of control. That was my part. What was it that I was afraid I was not going to receive from my mother as a result of her kicking me out of the house? It was very simple. She wasn't going to love me anymore. So you see, the underlying fear was fear of being unloved. I inventoried her numerous times before I got to the truth on that. The reason it is essential that we uncover the exact nature of our wrongs. Look at how step four is written differently than step five. In step five, we're not sharing a list of our wrongs. We're admitting to God, ourselves, and another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. That means the very nature means the origin, the cause of my wrong. In other words, specifically, how was I dishonest? Specifically, what did I lie about? Specifically, what was the underlying fear? You see, once I got to the truth about fear of being unloved, that resentment towards my mother melted away. When I was able to see my part, as it says here in the book, where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. I'm there to look at my part in that. So if it's not feeling resolved, it's generally because I haven't uncovered my part. I haven't uncovered the exact nature. And the only way I know how to get to the exact nature is through a series of questions. Not going to someone who is educated, but someone who has had personal experience in doing inventory and knowing what questions to ask. Now, when we do step six and seven, if I don't know specifically what it is I want God to remove, He's not going to remove it. And the reason for that is because there's one spiritual law that God will not violate, and that's called free will. I need to know what it is I want God to remove. So, if I don't know specifically that it's fear of being unloved or fear of being disliked or fear of being harmed to God in 6 and 7, it's not going to be removed. That's why I must know specifically what it is that I want Him to remove.
A couple of things to consider when doing your fourth step this week. Keep it simple. Know that you do not need to do it right and you cannot do it wrong. ask for guidance from the God of your understanding, and you will find that this is a simple and straightforward process. It does not matter who does the writing, whether it be you or your sponsor. What is most important is that you are willing to face the things that block you from the God of your understanding. Assuming that you did your fourth and fifth step, we're going to turn to page 75. That's page 75, paragraph 2. Page 75, paragraph 2. What we're going to be doing in the next few minutes is going over what we need to do after we complete our fifth step. In the event that your sponsor already walked you through this, I'm going to ask that you walk through it again with the rest of us in the workshop. For those of you that were not taken through the remaining steps in this way. Okay, paragraph 2. The authors say, we pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. Once we have taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. These are the fifth step promises. As we mentioned in an earlier session, that there are not 12 promises in this book. There are many, many promises. These are the fifth step promises. Here's something to consider. The authors are saying, once I've taken this step, providing I withhold nothing, I'm going to be delighted. That doesn't mean I'm excited about what I'm sharing with you in my inventory, but am I delighted about the work I'm doing? Now, if I'm not delighted, I can shut the book and stop there. Because that's exactly what my first sponsor did with me. I did my first inventory. He said, are you delighted? And I said, no. And then he asked me a couple other questions. Do you feel that you can look the world in the eye? Well, no. Do I feel alone at perfect peace and ease? No. Are my fears falling from me? No. Did I begin to feel the nearness of my Creator? No. And he shut the book. He shut the book and said, that's it. I said, what do you mean that's it? We need to go on and do the other steps. He said, no. He said, it says right here, once we've taken the step with holy nothing, we are delighted. He said, you left something out. No, I didn't. Oh, yeah, you did. About 3 days later, I give him a call and I say, you know, there was this one thing. There was this one little thing that I forgot to mention. And invariably, that has been my experience with people I've taken through the steps. They get to this point, they're not delighted. It's because there's something they're still holding on to. Because the authors are telling me, look how it's worded. Withholding nothing, we are delighted. These are the promises of doing the fifth step. Now, my only experience with the inventory was this was the first, not first, but rather most impactful relationship, or rather most impactful experience I had with God. Began to have a much more impactful experience when I did my fourth step. Because for the first time in my life, I was able to sit down with another human being and tell them about all the stuff that I had done, all the harm I had caused other people, all the secrets that I had concealed. These were all the things that were blocking me from God. So you see, when I'm willing to disclose that to another person, I am going to be delighted. And I started to experience what it says in the next sentence. That I could be alone in perfect peace and ease. So consider that. If you're not delighted about what you're doing, there's probably something you're leaving out. The last sentence, it says, we feel we're on the broad highway, walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. How many times have you been to meetings and heard the topic, let me hear your experience with being with the Spirit of the universe? I don't see any hands going up. It's right there in the book. They're telling us this is what we're going to experience.
This isn't about knowledge. This isn't about information. This is something we're going to experience. I'm going to begin experiencing walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. What's that like for you? See, if I don't have that experience, I can't transmit it. And if I haven't experienced it, I certainly can't talk about it. So if you're having an experience of walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe, I encourage you to take that experience back to your meetings and tell people about it. Share your experience about walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. Now, I would have resistance when I would hear people talking about these things in meetings. And the reason I had resistance to it is because I was not having that experience. So if you share an experience that I haven't had, my mind is going to have resistance to it. Oh, that's not possible. He's not really walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. He's just like the rest of us. He's a drunk just like me. Well, of course. But I'm here to tell you, when we take these steps in the way that they were done in the 40s, your sobriety is going to look really different, because that's what happened to me. My sponsor took me through the steps very quickly. See, you cannot take anybody through these steps too quickly. Well, I'll tell you what, you can take them through too slowly. See, I'm a real alcoholic. I need to get through these steps as quickly as possible because I need to get to that power, and I need to get to it now because I need power, because I'm a real alcoholic. So, consequently, people I got sober with, some of them didn't get around to doing their four steps until they were 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 months. I wasn't superior to those people. All I'm saying is that my sobriety looked really different. I felt really different than they did. They struggled much longer than I did. Because when I went all the way through the steps, I had that spiritual awakening. The compulsion to drink was removed. Okay, next paragraph. Here the authors are giving us specific instructions on what to do when we finish our fifth step. Returning home. You notice after we do this, it doesn't say, you know, take a week or two to consider what you did. It doesn't say go to a movie. You know, it doesn't say go take a bubble bath and relax. You've done a good job. No, it says returning home. In other words, I've just finished my fifth step. Returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. Carefully reviewing. That's why we don't burn our fourth step. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that in meetings. Yeah, I got done my fourth step. My sponsor said, go ahead and burn it. Why? I need that inventory for future reference. Then they ask us to say a prayer. It says, we thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know Him better. So if I'm going to thank God, that means I'm going to say a prayer. So I'm going to carefully review what I've already done. Then I'm going to say a prayer. I'm going to thank God from the bottom of my heart that I know Him better. Taking this book down from our shelf, we turn to the page which contains the 12 steps. That means I'm going to flip back to page 59. Carefully reading. Doesn't say read. Carefully reading the first five proposals, we ask, if I'm going to ask, that's a prayer. We ask if we have admitted anything, for we are building an arch through which we shall walk a free man at last. So you see, if I'm going to be free, if I want that freedom, these are the instructions that are necessary for me to follow. In other words, I'm going to turn back to page 59, and I'm going to take the first five steps, and I'm going to take them and turn them into questions. Have I admitted that I have no power over alcohol? Have I admitted that my life is unmanageable? In other words, I need a new manager. And then I'm going to review step two. Have I come to believe that a power greater than me can restore my sanity? And then I'm going to go to step three. I'm going to ask that question. Have I made that decision to turn my will, my life over to the care of God as I understand Him? Step four, have I made a searching and fearless moral inventory? Step five, have I admitted to myself, to God, and another person the exact nature of my wrongs? And then they're going to ask us to consider further questions. I was taught that wherever there's a question mark in the book, it's like a stop sign. I'm going to stop and I'm going to ask that question. Is our work solid so far? So stop and ask yourself that. Is your work solid so far? Are the stones properly in place? Have you skimped on the cement put into the foundation? Have we tried to make mortar without sand? These are the things we will consider in this hour.
Beginner's Big Book provides sharing partners for this meeting only. They can work with you on a one-to-one basis to take all 12 steps and be recovered from alcoholism. Any men or women who want to take the 12 steps, please connect with a sharing partner. Will the sharing partners who want to work with others, please raise your hand. Thank you. In honor of our AA pioneers in the old tradition, we'll simply stand without holding hands and close this meeting with the Lord's Prayer.